Easter is an interruption. We are used to speaking of the good news of Jesus' resurrection as just that, good news. And it is the best of news. This is a day for pulling out all the stops, for joyful words and bold proclamations and glad songs and alleluias aplenty. Easter is the church's great festival of hope and new life, and it is absolutely good news. And at just the same time, it is also an interruption. I think it's easy to forget that part, because the story very definitely seemed to be going in a different direction. That much is absolutely true. Jesus was dead, really and truly dead. He got himself crossways with the religious and political leadership of his time, and finally they took action. He was crucified in a public display of imperial power during a religious festival when plenty of folks were around to watch the spectacle. He died on a cross, was taken down, and was buried. It most certainly seemed that his story was finished at this point. Dead people do tend to stay dead. Which is why, of course, the Easter stories all begin as stories of mourning, with friends and followers doing the expected thing when life has ended: grieving, remembering, showing respect. Yes, Jesus had talked about his death before and about rising on the third day, but everybody seems to have forgotten about all that in the trauma and chaos of the past day's events. When Mary shows up at the tomb on Easter morning, she is clearly not there expecting to find anything out of the ordinary. She's expecting a cold burial place, the body of her teacher and friend, some quiet space to grieve, nothing more. I think this is the first thing to say on Easter morning, that everyone thought the story was going in a different direction at this point and was, in fact, over. Because without that in mind, it's easy to miss the truly earth-shaking surprise of what followed. What followed immediately, of course, was confusion. Mary finds the tomb empty in the early hours of Easter day, and she runs to wake the others and tell them something is definitely amiss. Peter and the beloved disciple have this race back to the tomb and look again, trying to make sense of the empty space where their friend's body was supposed to be. Somehow the story isn't over. Death wasn't the end for Jesus. Now, we are used to how that statement sounds. It's become a familiar proclamation after nearly 2,000 years. But of course, this was not a familiar idea on Easter day. And the news of the risen Jesus on the loose might well have raised a whole bunch of questions. Like, what will a resurrected Messiah act like? Will he come back with superhuman powers and a taste for revenge? Will he be angry? After all, he wasn't exactly treated well the last time he saw anyone. The powerful took his life and his disciples, his closest friends and followers, even the ones who did not betray him, all turned and fled in his hour of need. Jesus would have every reason to be vengeful, to wish ill upon those who had done him harm or vanished into the night when things got difficult. That would be the natural response. Don't you think? So the news that Jesus has risen might not have immediately sounded like good news that first Easter. Nobody could have known what to expect. There was no real precedent to go by here. I think it's important to notice that, because here the staggering news of Easter really starts to come into focus. Not only does Jesus' story not end with the grave, but it takes this radical and revolutionary turn besides. Jesus does not return armed and dangerous, but empty-handed, with limbs that still bear the marks of the nails. Jesus doesn't return angry and vengeful. He returns with staggering, inexplicable mercy. Jesus shows up in a way that is totally counter to usual human practice. The risen Christ comes to interrupt the familiar patterns of reciprocity and revenge. He comes not perpetuating the cycle of violence, but stopping it. And I don't know about you, but this feels like an urgent Easter message to me this year. Violence is contagious, Shane Claiborne writes. Violence begets violence. A rude look is exchanged for a cold shoulder, a nasty gesture for a honked horn. Hatred begets hatred. Pick up the sword and die by the sword. Kill us and we'll kill you. There is a contagion of violence in the world. It is spreading like a disease. He wrote those words 10 years ago, but sadly they are every bit as true now, maybe even more so. We are celebrating Easter this year in the midst of wars raging in so many places, in the midst of conflicts where one hurt or wrong simply leads to another in seemingly endless spirals. Christians are often right there in the fray, many speaking and acting as though Jesus came back from the dead simply to join their side in the battle and add more fuel to the fire. And bitterness and reactivity and even violence are hardly limited to war zones. They're as close as school playgrounds and office common rooms and social media platforms and dinner tables. If somebody cuts me off on my bike when I'm riding home from work, the impulse to shout something nasty in response rises right up in me. It feels like the most natural thing. And I think Easter means to interrupt all of it. Because in Jesus' resurrection, we are faced with this strange, unexpected, and truly earth-shaking twist in the story. That Jesus comes back from the very worst that the world could offer. Not with vengeance, but with forgiveness, and with a word of peace. This Easter is a time for letting that great interruption sink in for us a bit. In this reactive and vengeful time, I find one profound sign of hope in a place where the cycle of violence has long been running. The Parents Circle Bereaved Families Forum is a community made up of Palestinians and Israelis who are united by their experience of loss. To belong to this group, which has about 800 members today, you must have lost an immediate relative to the ongoing conflict. The mission is simple, but to me, breathtakingly beautiful. It's to take their shared experience of pain and transform it into a force for reconciliation, dialogue, and peace. Since October 2023, 80 new families from both sides have joined the forum, taking the countercultural step to process their losses across lines that have only become harder and more bitter. They are as active as ever today, speaking widely to as many as will listen, to their stories and their bold witness, to the cost of the cycle of violence and the possibility of a shared future. I've personally had the opportunity to listen to this group a handful of times. Once in person several years ago with a pilgrimage group from our congregation, and more recently in a podcast, and I always find myself absolutely floored by their courage and their integrity and their moral authority. Empathy is everything, says Bassam Aramin, a Palestinian man who joined this group years ago after his 10-year-old daughter was killed by a stray bullet from an Israeli soldier. If you lose your empathy for others, he goes on, you lose your humanity. You become a monster. And you can only have empathy for someone if you know what they have suffered, if you are willing to listen to them and talk with them. This has the power to bring change on all levels of society. I imagine few members of the forum are Christian, but I think it is an amazing example of the sort of life the Easter interruption points us to. This is the sort of life I think the risen Jesus means to enable, where cycles of violence are stopped, where we are open to listening to and empathizing with our neighbors, no matter who they are, where new possibilities emerge beyond the tired, old us and them. So you might be sitting there right now and thinking this all sounds incredibly difficult, and that's probably right. But we are not asked to simply summon this way of life out of the air. Just look at where our Easter gospel reading goes this morning. In the fog of her grief and sorrow, Mary Magdalene doesn't recognize Jesus when he's standing right there in front of her. And he does the most wonderful thing. He simply speaks her name. Mary, he says. No lecture, no judgment, no shame. Just the gift of naming her, including her, welcoming her. At Easter, we remember that the risen Jesus meets us like that too. He calls our names, gathering us in, including us, welcoming us. He doesn't berate us for our shortcomings or failures, but meets us empty-handed with generous, inexplicable mercy. Do you see it? Jesus doesn't simply give us the assignment to go and interrupt the cycle of violence out there in the world. He himself interrupts it in our own lives. He shows us grace so we can show grace to others. And just as violence is contagious, so too is grace. An act of kindness inspires another act of kindness, Claiborne writes. A random smile is exchanged for an open door. Helping someone carry their laundry or groceries makes them nicer. Randomly paying someone's toll in the car behind you invites them to pay it forward. A single act of forgiveness can feel like it heals the world. Grace begets grace. Love rubs off on those who are loved. Easter is an interruption of grace, friends. A stick jammed into the revolving spokes of the violence of human society. In the resurrection, Jesus not only shows us a better way, he loves us into it. There is a great gift there, friends, and a calling too. It is good news, the best of news, for you, for us all, and for our hurting world. We sing it, we proclaim it, we go out to live it. Alleluia, Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Alleluia. Alleluia.